I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm editor Candace Keener, joined as always by writer Jane McGrath.
Hey there, Candace.
Hey, Jane. So a couple of weeks ago, one of our colleagues, Kristen Conger, got to go see the Terracotta Army exhibition at the High Museum of Art, and she wrote this fantastic article about it, and we couldn't resist sharing it with everyone today.
Yeah, that's right. It's really exciting that they're able to take a couple of these soldiers and bring them around there at the British Museum for a while, and we're lucky enough to be in Atlanta, and they brought them here to the High. And it's really cool story about this Terracotta Army. It was actually just discovered in the 70s, and it all has to do with this emperor who unified China, actually. He was considered basically the first emperor of China, and his name is Qin Shi Huangdi. And if we go back to about the 6th century BC China, at that time, China wasn't a unified country or kingdom at all. It was fractured into about 6 or 7 different kingdoms.
And so Qin was the first one who really brought all of these different provinces and kingdoms together, and he did it in a very shrewd way. First of all, he used conscription to gather an army together, so essentially he forced men to join his army. And then, by using this army to overpower different nations, he was able to get people under his thumb, and he kept them under his thumb by unifying a system of currency that everyone could use. And furthermore, he systematized things like weights and measures and written language, so he really got people to unify not only through their submission to him, but through the way that they exchanged goods and traded and the way that they recorded their lives.
So you can see a lot of benefits from this, although I guess it wasn't all selfless, as he did this all to basically build his own power. Obviously, you have like 6 different kingdoms with 6 different currencies. It's difficult to build bridges and bring things together that way.
And it's funny that he sort of tapped himself for that mission, like, oh, I guess I'll unify China today. And so he did, but it worked. And not only that, but he started building canals and roads, and he was the first one to really institute the first portion of the Great Wall of China to protect his kingdom from invaders from the north.
That's right, and we've done a podcast on that as well.
Yes, we have. But the funny thing is, when you're that powerful and you sort of proclaim yourself as the ruler, you're bound to have a couple of enemies. And there were a few assassination attempts on his life, but he escaped. But he did eventually die. But before he died, he had a certain plan that he wanted carried out for his afterlife.
We should note he had a very intense fear of death. And like you said, these assassination attempts, which he barely dodged, it's understandable that he would have a fear of death after that. But in addition to those things, he wanted to see if he could possibly not die. And he did a few things.
I love that.
Yeah, I know. He did a few things to try to do that. And he commissioned a task force to go to this mythical island that's had a sort of fountain of youth type power that they thought of.
Was it St. Augustine, Florida? Because I've been there.
I don't think
and
it
I
was
drank
that.
It. I'm still holding on.
I can see it. I can see it.
Yeah, beautiful glow.
But in addition to that, he got alchemists and magicians to make him pills and potions to try to hang on to his youth. And Confucian philosophers at this time actually condemned a lot of the stuff that he was doing. They thought it was all hocus pocus and wrong. And in response, this was a dangerous move because in response, Qin had hundreds of them killed. But yeah, it just goes to show his intense fear of death and intense fear of what would happen to him after death.
But he also had a very grandiose notion that if and when he did die, he would rule the universe. And he had a very concrete, no pun intended, terracotta plan, no pun intended, for how he was going to rule the cosmos in his second life. So he essentially commissioned, I guess, about 1,000 different artisans to build him this vast army that included about 7,000 soldiers of different ranks. We're talking about everyone from mere archers and men holding crossbows up to very esteemed generals, about 800 horses, and a band of musicians and acrobats and bureaucrats. And he was creating for himself an army as well as some sort of menagerie and a circus or some sort of entertainment site to keep him protected and amused in his afterlife.
One thing that's interesting is they're all facing east. Yeah. We have a great article on this on site by our colleague, Kristen Conger, and she explains that one theory about this is that he had unified other kingdoms to the east, so it's thought that like his enemies were to the east, and so that's why his army is facing that way. But also, we should note that a lot of these are estimations. We say, like, you'll see, oh, there are 7,000 warriors, oh, there are 6,000, oh, there are 8,000, and that's because actually not all of them have been excavated, and archaeologists are taking their sweet time taking everything out because it's so precious. And for one example, for instance, when these soldiers were originally made, they were brightly colored, just vibrant colors. And
purples
now,
and reds, yeah, and greens.
Yeah, and now you look at it, you see pictures, and they're grayish and they're drab looking, and that's because these colors didn't last well over time, and especially even when you take them out today, excavating them from the land, when the sun hits them, it really hurts the colors.
And so they just don't have the technology yet to really delve into the full depths of this tomb. And what they've hit so far, or what the people who discovered it, a group of farmers back in 1974, they hit about 13 feet underground in search of water, actually. It was a total accidental discovery. They were out on March 29th looking for water, and they discovered a bunch of clay shards, and it got more suspicious when they pulled out what looked like a head of something. So they called a group of historians and archaeologists in, and that's when the excavations really began. But what hasn't been touched so far is what people think is a series of palaces and ships and very big structures that would have been built from the same type of material.
Yeah, and one thing that's interesting is that the tomb, which these soldiers are protecting, they're taking their sweet time excavating that because some say that it's actually booby-trapped and, like, they set up crossbows. Yeah, and so I would take my sweet time, too.
Yeah, definitely. And we know for a fact that people have broken, well, I guess I shouldn't say we know for a fact. We have pretty good evidence to suggest that people broke into the tomb shortly after Qin died. Because,
that's right, there's evidence of fire, right?
Yeah, fire and toppled soldiers, which may indicate that they just settled with time, but more likely they were toppled when someone was breaking in. And we should note, too, that after Qin died in 210 BC, his kingdom didn't last for much longer. A new ruler ushered in a new age, and so his tomb went vastly unprotected. But ancient manuscripts describe that he was buried with all sorts of extravagant pieces of gold and pearls and fine gems, which could still be down there. We don't know. But
yeah, great fodder for a raid, obviously.
Exactly. And so texts like this suggest that there's a lot waiting to be unearthed. But let's talk a little bit about how these soldiers were made.
What's interesting about how these soldiers were made was that they actually had a variety of molds so that you had a sense of realism in the soldiers. Some were smaller, some were bigger, but, you know, and they used different kinds for different ranks in the army as well. And they had about 25 different styles of beard and, like, the way their hair is tied up in knots on the back of their head, often askew. It's very different and it changes. And another interesting part is that there's a sense of racial diversity among these different soldiers, and they actually reflect, interestingly, the kind of racial diversity that is present in modern-day China, which I find fascinating. And so one example of this would be that about 20% of the soldiers have square earlobes, and so that means more than half have, like, round earlobes, and that's the same kind of percentage or proportion from modern-day Chinese.
So the verisimilitude is just amazing, and you may be wondering why would the laborers have cared enough to go to all this effort? And we should mention that long, long, long before Henry Ford had his assembly lines making cars, the ancient Chinese had their own assembly lines making these figures. And like Jane said, they use molds to at least form the bodies, and we know that they range in general from about 6 to 6.5 feet tall, and the assembly workers would have started by building bases for them. And they were very heavy, so they had to be very well-constructed, solid bases. And then they would have made their different types of bodies according to whether the soldier would be kneeling or standing, if he had a very fierce stance, if he was standing at attention, or maybe he was creating an acrobat or a musician. But where the handiwork really came into play was the individualized details of the face.
Yeah, every artisan or individual laborer, not all of them were artisans. They were just sort of slaves who were forced to do this. They took great, I guess, pride in making the different individual facial expressions. Some look fiercer, some look serene.
Here's the catch. All of the laborers' names were stamped on the bottom of the statues, and this wasn't like Van Gogh signing his name to a masterpiece he'd made. It was to hold the laborer accountable for any flaws in craftsmanship that there may have been.
That's right, and these assembly lines that Candace mentioned were about 1,000 people big. So, like, you have this 1,000-person assembly line, and I think the foreman had to sign his name to each individual soldier. And what I find really cool is that these soldiers, you see them today, and they look like they have their hands out, and they're holding something, and it's not there. And what they were holding were actual real weapons.
Made out of bronze, is that right?
Yeah, bronze and wood. The wood has actually not stood the test of time, and so they're not there anymore. But there are lots of evidence and remains of the metal that was kind of ahead of its time because it didn't corrode over time. And it's just shocking to me that why would Qin, you know, have these clay armies but give them real weapons?
And also, I think they had armor made out of limestone.
Mm.
So he really had them all decked out. And what this does, I think, is paints a picture of a very talented and very capable ruler, but shows his very human and almost childlike side with his superstition and his great fears. And I wonder what was going through the mind of such a great and intelligent man who thought he could rule in his afterlife and who thought he needed protection from these forces.
Yeah, and he wasn't alone. You know, I mean, obviously there are examples in ancient Egypt of people being buried with their things for the purposes of afterlife. But in China as well, this one emperor, Han Lin Di, actually, he took the throne about 53 years after Qin, and he made a similar burial site not too far away from Qin's. And the soldiers are actually smaller in stature, and all different kinds of animals are there as well, statues of animals. Overall, it's not as vast as Qin's, and some people say that this is a reflection of a nicer ruler, because he was actually much nicer than Qin.
And he certainly would have had to have commissioned less artists to work on the army. So
yeah, less
I guess that
slave
points
laborers.
To the fact, less slave labor, exactly.
Yeah.
So this is such an interesting example of not only history, but art history too. And you can learn so much about a culture judging by the artifacts that it produces, you know, how it values proportion and color and detail. And so I think it's just fascinating, a fascinating example of art and of historical narrative and a glimpse into the mind of a interesting and strange man.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it.
So if you want to learn more about the Terracotta Army, be sure to check out the article, How the Terracotta Army Works, on HowStuffWorks.com.
While you're there, be sure to check out our blog, Stuff You Missed in History Class, which Candace and I both write on every day.
And we'll see you there. Be sure to send us your comments and questions to historypodcast@HowStuffWorks.com, or you can leave comments and questions for us on the posts that we blog about at HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.